there's a wonderful bunches of suttas that I love to talk about. In one series of suttas, an old monk comes to the Buddha and he says, "I'm concerned about how I'm going to face death when it happens. I'm concerned, like, what will happen to my mind and how I'll relate to it." And the Buddha says, "Don't worry, you've been practicing. It will be okay." And what the Buddha is saying there is not, "Don't worry, be happy," or, you know, "Don't think about it," or "Put it away." What the Buddha is saying is, that's why you've been meditating. That's why we're doing this. Not just to relieve ourselves of stress, not just to find a way to safely take inventory of our actions so that we know which behaviors are causing ourselves suffering and which behaviors are causing ourselves peace. But a real reason is also to prepare ourselves for when we have to deal with real difficulties. In life, as the Buddha said, there will be old age, there will be sickness, there will be death. We will lose people we love. We will be experience all sorts of bad outcomes. Things that we want, we won't get. That's the first noble truth. That's the foundation of the Buddha's teachings, which is not avoiding the truth of what life entails, but looking it square in the eye. Now, life is not only that. It's not, and it's not just a bleak looking at it, but we do, as human beings, have a tendency to shudder and avoid facing these issues. As Elizabeth Kubler-Ross famously detected in her clinical studies of the way people relate to their own mortality, the first three phases we go through have nothing to do at all with skillfully working with the issue. The first thing we do with any sign of mortality is deny it. And we get angry. And then we bargain. All those are complete wastes of time. It's only when we get to the sadness of feeling the feelings, and then fifth, acceptance, that we're getting anywhere. But we have to go through a lot of denial, avoidance, aversion, running away from. So the Buddha's teachings are giving us a completely alternative way of relating to this material that's so important in life. I have to say, certainly a large part of my own experience was my mom's last 15 to 20 years was spent in a nursing home / hospice. She had a degenerative disease, and then my dad got a degenerative disease, and then all along that period of 15 to 20 years, I was going to hospitals and hospices, then also being sober for a long time, I've known, unfortunately, a lot of very young, close friends who quite suddenly die through relapses. So I've seen it. I mean, I've been around it. It's not an abstract concept for me. Very much a weekly thing I was facing. And I noticed that there's a lot of tendencies when you see a lot of people working with tragedy or bad news or mortality. Or one of the things I noticed is that some people just really want to avoid it at all costs. You see family members who are grudgingly going to a hospital but really clearly would rather be anywhere else and cannot wait to leave. And they basically want to show up for the exact minimum amount of time they feel is presentable before they can flee. And on the other end, there are people who, when somebody dies or when bad news happens, that immediately jump into action and try to take control and try to immediately, okay, you don't have to do anything. I'm going to order the flowers and get the arrangements and do that, because part of that is just doing as much as possible to not feel, to not be with the person who's suffering, or not be with the what's really happening, not sit with it. It's like immediately jumping into action. And now, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with being helpful, far from it, but in my experience, the most important thing we can do first when faced with life's real, most challenging experiences is first take a step back, pause, be with what's really happening, the feelings, even if it's somebody else's tragedy, to open to it, to open to what's happening, to be available, and to not need to fix other people's feelings or take control or run away, just be with what is happening. It's a very, very important, profound skill. Unfortunately, in our lives, we're very often preparing ourselves for difficult times in absolutely the most backwards way we can. When I at work and in different environments, I see people who, when they're faced with a lot of suddenly they get some bad news at work, or they, you know, the shit hits the fan in work or relationships or something, they immediately need to do two things. They stop asking for help. They immediately need to deal with everything themselves. And instead of just focusing on the first thing that needs to get done and prioritizing, they carry everything in their mind that has to get done. Oh my God, I gotta do this, I gotta do that, I gotta do that. And when you offer to help, they're like, no. I'm too busy. I'm too busy to delegate. I'm too busy. I've got to deal with, I got a babysitter, and I got this, and I got this. And there's this incapacity to put anything down, to put anything aside. So what stress and what challenges do is train us to basically not use resources, not reach out, not prioritize, but to do all the exact opposite, to not even be with the feeling of, oh, I'm overwhelmed, let me relax. We don't even do that. So a lot of this practice is founding on first being able to put aside all the unessential stories that we carry around in our mind and be able to feel what's happening. One of the things that gets in the way of feeling and being with difficulties and challenges and life's most important events is that we try to figure it out. We immediately go into the thinking mind and we try to put a nice little statement around it. Well, he lived a long life. Well, at least he died bicycling in Italy. You know, at least he... Well, at least he died having sex. At least, you know, we try to say the thing that will make it go away. That will make the other person not be so sad. Or that will make us not feel so sad. Rather than feeling what's really occurred. So part of the practice of meditating every day is not just bringing peace to our minds by reducing the amount of mental agitation and content, but is also literally practicing for when there will come a time when we will need to put aside all the excess obligations in our life and be able to just need to take care of ourselves. This is really important practice. I once worked with a woman who was extremely close with her mom. And her mom was just in her 60s, and her mom died quite suddenly. And the very next day, she was at work. And I could understand, because I assumed that just being at home would remind her of her mom's not being there. But instead of being able to be with what had happened, this great loss, she was sort of zombie walking through being at work and still showing up at meetings and half being there and half not being there in this sort of almost dissociative trance-like state. And the idea, I think, was, wow, work will be a distraction. I won't have to feel this, or it'll help me mitigate feeling this loss. But nothing mitigates feelings. There is no tamping down feelings of loss or death. All we're doing is running. And that's yet, it's what we tend to do often if we're not just containing it all and not sharing and not and just taking control and not feeling it. Another thing we'll do is we'll simply try to look for as many distractions as we can so we don't have to feel what's really occurred. So this practice of meditation, of daily putting aside the dramas, the obligations, the all the things we think we need to think about all the time, is incredibly important practice. It will come in so essential at certain points of your life. I can't even convey it. There is a wonderful teaching. This brings up my one of my favorite teachings in the Buddhist canon. It's of a very poor woman named Kisa Gotami. And Kisa Gotami grew up very poor and was from the lower caste. And in ancient and in even relatively modern India, there's a very hierarchical caste system, and there's very little chance of social mobility, to say the least. So she had a son that was very promising. He was very athletic, as a young child, he was very athletic. And there was some possibility that at least he was going to have a better life. And quite suddenly he got bit by a snake and died. So Kisa Gotami, thinking about all the stories of how hard her life had been and how this tragedy was happening to her, got lost in this insanity, this madness of self-pity, and carried her dead child through the town where she lived, holding this dead child's body, refusing to acknowledge truly that he was dead, in a profound denial. Then she went around to various people asking if they could bring her child back to life. And finally, one elder took pity on her and said, well, the Buddha is teaching nearby. Why don't you go and talk to him? So she goes to the Buddha and she presents her child. She says, please, is there anything you can do to help? Now, if it wasn't Buddhism, if this was a story in the New Testament, I'll tell you how this would play out. You haven't guessed. Christ would say, behold the workings of your Savior. Voila! And the child would come back to life. And she would fall before my Savior. I have seen the one true God. Or something to the Bible is more poetic than I am off the cuff, but you get the idea. If it was in the Old Testament, which us Jews, right, it would be far more depressing. It would be, she'd be told to go up to some mountaintop where a thundering voice would say, I have taken your child as a message to let you know that all of mankind is evil and shall be cleansed, and you shall be the woman that will be saved, and you shall never look back as locusts and various unlikely death vehicles descend upon the city. Or whatever. I have done this to show you how all-powerful I am, your God. You think that God in the Old Testament would have come up with other ways to show he's all-powerful, but he tended to do things like that, kill kids and, you know, women, livestock. I've killed your cows to show you that I am God. Just so crazy, but whatever. But this is neither any of those. This is the Buddha. He had no magical powers, just a guy, couldn't do any magic acts, no miracles. So what he says is, listen, what I would like you to do is to go and collect mustard seeds from any house in the city where there's not been death and bring it back to me. That's all he says. She assumes that what he's saying is he'll bring back the child to life, but all he says is just bring me back mustard seeds from a house where there's not been death. So she goes around to one house after another, and each time she says the same thing. My child is dead. The Buddha said he could do something, and they say, well, of course. And a mustard seed is the most common thing in ancient India. It's like, it would be like asking for a grain of rice. So she says, I just need a mustard seed. And they say, of course. And then she says, there's just one catch. You haven't experienced any death, have you? And they say, well, yes, my uncle, my aunt, my mother, our niece, our nephew, my brother just died. And every house she goes to, she hears another variation of death, of mortality. And eventually, she gets it. She comes back. She no longer is clutching the body. She offers the body of her child to the Buddha, and the Buddha, with her, brings it to the where they leave the bodies, and she walks away. And she's accepted it. Now, if the Buddha had simply said, hey, it happens to everyone, it's not about you. That would not have worked. What the Buddha is doing is he's making Kisa Gotami experience herself through a proto form of almost a support group, or, you know, just acquainting herself with it. She's getting out of it the story of this is happening to me. This is about me. Tragedy is happening to me. And this core ability to take the it's all about me out of the experience and just be with the loss is the core teaching that the Buddha is offering. That's the way we work with. That's the way we get through tragedy and loss. That's the way we get through rejection, abandonment, separation, frustration. That's the way. It's putting aside the story of why is this happening to me? Why am I the one? Why am I special? Why am I being picked on by the universe? And we're going directly into the place where we see that it's happening all around us. And we're also experiencing the feelings as they're arising right now in the body, in the mind, but not through the thoughts, just everything else, the real stuff that's happening. We're feeling. We're not intellectualizing or trying to get rid of it with a nice little, well, it happens to everyone. We're really going into the nitty-gritty. This is why another great analogy in Buddhist practice is the practice of the turtle, which is, it's said that the turtle practices going into the shell with its head and its what are they, feet, legs, arms? I don't know what the fuck. Anyway, the limbs. The turtle's limbs and its head goes in. And this is important to note that there are five. There's a head and four limbs. But it tucks and practices tucking into the shell because one day there's going to be a fox outside. And if it goes into its shell and it just falls asleep, eventually one of its limbs will come out. And because it's not aware, and the fox will kill it, will bite the leg, and then the turtle will die, and then the fox will eat it. On the other hand, if the turtle gets anxious and can't be inside of its shell comfortably for a while taking care of itself, and it needs to peek out, is the fox still there? The fox will wait and bite off its head. It's the same thing what we're practicing with is we're practicing bringing in the five senses inwards so that we, when we are faced with something that's really difficult, can bring our awareness in and feel what's happening inside and be with it rather than need to go out flooding back into the world immediately. There'll be chances to make decisions if we need to make decisions, but I assure you that when we're faced with really bad news, there's generally very little to do. When you hear that somebody has gotten very gravely ill, when you get bad news, generally there's very little to do immediately. The first thing we need to do is take care of ourselves and then offer what we can. So when we go inside, I'll finish with there's three things we can expect. The first is that the mind will say, what the fuck are you doing? Why am I taking care of myself? Why am I just first breathing and just feeling what's happening? Why aren't I engaging? Everybody's going to expect me to do something. You don't have to do this for any longer than it takes simply to breathe, relax, and prioritize and feel what's going on. Then you can be part of all the activity. But it's very important to start from a place that's grounded and centered and in touch, rather than from a frantic place of needing to take charge simply because we don't want to feel what's inside. When the mind immediately says, oh, I don't have any time for first grounding myself, what I tend to tell it is, well, if I do need to make any decisions, I probably would be best served if I'm from a very focused, prioritized, calm place. And that's what I'm doing. I'm getting myself to that place where if I do need to do something, I'm doing it not from the need to just act, the need to say something, the need to be heard, the need to distract myself, but I'm actually doing it from a place of not needing to do anything, just being of help. Secondly, when we go inside, we might experience that. So that we need to give ourselves a pep talk, in other words. The second thing we might experience is a lot of agitation, a lot of just stress and difficulty. And that's why we're practicing being, relaxing the body, relaxing the breath, using the breath to bring us peace. So that when we do face real challenges and we need to get in touch, we have a method of entering the body that's safe, entering our feelings that's safe. And finally, you might experience just the need to shut down entirely. A lot of people, when they're faced with tragedy or bad fortune, just immediately go to sleep. Literally try to shut everything out. Literally try to just check out. And it's very important to remind ourselves that this is not processing, feeling, or being with what we need to be with. That checking out is simply delaying, and not only that, it's in essence, it creates a very distorted experience that we have to go through in the future. Because we're not anymore dealing with the real loss. We're then in the future dealing with different losses, different feelings, stuff that we've been just packing away for a long time that then comes up as a mess. It's much more useful to be with stuff as it occurs. And one way to do that is to have a process of feeling the breath energy in the spine as it moves up and it energizes us. So that's ways that Buddhist practice prepares us for dealing with life's greatest challenges without stressing ourselves out, without adding drama. At no point did the Buddha ever say that we prepare ourselves by envisioning bad outcomes. That's what we also tend to do. We tend to, when we hear bad possible news, we try to go to the worst possible outcome and envision it. That's not part of the practice. So you don't have to do that. The preparation comes with being able to feel what's happening as it happens, being able to put aside all the excess stuff that doesn't have to do with the most important issue, with being able to calm ourselves when we're anxious, with being able to keep ourselves alert when we want to shut down, with giving ourselves permission to ground ourselves and prioritize even though everybody else wants us to jump into action or we might feel that need. So I thank you for listening so much. And now's your turn to ask any questions or share any experiences or on anything in the Buddhist path. So thank you.